BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I grew up hearing stories about our next guest. When I was a little kid, my dad would sit down at bedtime and he would tell stories, often about his minor league baseball career. One of the primary subjects of those stories was a man named Wilbur Huckle. Now, my father and Will Huckle played baseball together in the Mets minor league system. They were both all-star minor league infielders, and they crossed paths in 1969 in Tidewater, AAA. Far as I know, Wilbur Huckle had freckles, a full head of red hair, and endless energy. My father and Wilbur Huckle hung out together. They were roommates. My dad reported that Huckle would stand in the middle of their room and jump rope while they watched TV and on hotels on road trips. When they boarded the bus, my dad remembers that Huckle would sometimes walk down the center aisle, making calls like he was an exotic bird in the jungle. As a kid, I remember watching grainy 8mm film that was in my parents' house, and one of the films featured my father and Huckle on the field in uniform before a AAA game. Huckle's holding a baseball bat on the steps of the dugout. He's pretending to play the saxophone, and then he pulls out a prank cigarette. It was like an exploding cigarette. He lights it, turns to the camera, and waits for the fun. Minor league baseball in the 1960s was good baseball. AAA baseball in the 1960s, ball players will tell you how good it was. We're talking about just the beginning of baseball expansion. Deep rosters in the big leagues. Deep rosters in AAA. Had a lot of players in AAA that would have been big league players. Wilbur Huckle, one of those guys. He's joining us now from Texas in his 80s. So real treat for me. We can punch him up here. Wilbur Huckle, thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here for it.
Give us an idea. Where do you live?
Central West Texas, and the closest town is Cross Plains, Texas, and we're in a little community called Crosscut. 14 people at times, and sometimes 18 or 20, depending on who comes and who leaves.
Now, you're in your 80s. There's some question about how old you are. What is your real age?
83, and I see in some places they got me born in 1937, but I'm a 41 baby boy.
There you go. Wilbur Huckle with us. Look, I grew up hearing stories about you as a ball player in the minor leagues. What was that time like for you in the 1960s?
Well, it was quite an eye-opener compared to high school and college. And you may have been a pretty good athlete in college and high school, but you never knew what you were going to encounter when you got to the minor leagues. Everybody else was just as good as you, if not better.
The players that you played with at that time, like what do you remember? You know, you sign with the Mets organization, you come up through that organization, and you know, you are playing in places like Williamsport and Jacksonville and Memphis and Tidewater, and you know, what did that feel like to you as a you know, a guy in your 20s trying to get to the big leagues?
Well, I think I didn't set my goals high enough. I was just happy to be playing baseball. And Red Murph was the guy that signed me. And one day he was at a ball game, and I was still in college. And I went up and told him, Red, I'm ready to sign a contract. He said, okay, I'll give you $5,000. And I said, Red, everybody else is getting a bunch more than that. And I said, I got to think about that. So I came back the next day and talked to him. I said, Red, I'm ready to sign. He said, okay, but now it's only $3,000.
So you lost some money there in the negotiation. Your first year in baseball, 1963, the Mets, you know, are having a dismal season in the major leagues. Casey Stengel is the manager. You know, you in September, you get a chance to get called up and and you know, walk onto the field at the Polo Grounds. What do you remember about that call-up that September?
Well, we were at Raleigh, North Carolina, and Tommy Burns was our manager. And at the end of the season, he said, "You and Cleon Jones have been called up. Meet me at the airport the next morning." So, boy, I was there bright and early. We couldn't find Cleon, so I went on, got on the bus, and flew to New York. About 4 or 5 days later, they're still hunting Cleon, and they finally find him. And they said, "Cleon, where have you been?" He said, "I had a dental appointment." So Cleon, I think, was a little bit nervous about the big city life.
The Polo Grounds, give us an idea. Like, you know, most of us never saw it, certainly didn't walk onto the grass and have batting practice there. What do you remember about getting to the Polo Grounds?
Well, it was great. It was better than anything I'd ever seen, even though it was not quite up to big league status. But I do remember meeting Duke Snyder in the locker room. That was the first guy I met. Nobody else was in there. He shook my hand and told me who he was. And, of course, I was in awe then. And then we walked out onto the field, and you had to walk across center field to the dugout. And the Giants were in town, and Willie Mays and Willie McCovey were in the outfield. Come over and shook my hand and said, "We're both rookies. Glad to meet you. What's your name?" So they were something else.
What did McCovey and Mays look like? I only saw McCovey late in his career, and I did not see him as a young player. You know, you're standing there with Willie Mays, standing there with Willie McCovey. It had to be something.
Well, it was, and they both, well, Willie Mays had pretty good shoulders himself, but Willie McCovey was just huge. There's no telling what size sport coat he would have wore, but it was just amazing. He probably wore a 50, but, oh, he was huge. Just, you say, what am I doing here when you got guys like this?
Wilbur Huckle is with us in the Mets organization in the 1960s. He was a teammate of my father's in AAA Tidewater in 1969. Wilbur, Casey Stengel was the manager of the Mets at that time. This was a bad team. I think they lost like 111 games that year. And you don't get into a game. You don't get onto the field. You don't get to pinch run. You don't get to hit. Did Stengel have anything to say to you at all, or just you were there to work out, or what was the story?
Well, at the end of the season, the Mets protected five players. And I was lucky enough to be one of them. And so Cleon and I were brought up. I can't remember the other three for the moment. But we sat there for 10 days, and finally I said, "I'm going to go talk to Casey." I said, "Casey, am I ever going to get to play?" And he said, "No, kid. He said, you don't have any experience." So that was my deal, my cup of coffee in the big leagues.
True cup of coffee. Were you glad that you had that experience and got to see it, or did it stay with you after? Because you were, you know, 1963 is your first year in baseball, and then, you know, you spend the next 7 or 8 years trying to get back there.
Yeah, it was wonderful, and like I said, I was just so happy to be playing professional baseball that I guess I was more or less satisfied and just took it as it was.
You were a middle infielder, and you got a chance to play in that Mets organization with a lot of great pitchers. They had great pitchers at that time, guys like Tom Seaver and Nolan Ryan. What was it like? You know, you were roommates with Seaver, I think. And what was it like to play behind those guys as an infielder?
Well, I don't know. I'm sort of oblivious. Just they were pitchers, and I was an infielder. And Tom Seaver and I were roommates in AAA, and I think the Mets, that was the first year for Seaver, and I think the Mets thought that, okay, we'll let Seaver room with Huckle because he won't do anything wrong or get Tom Seaver in trouble.
My dad also was a roommate of yours, and he remembers you jumping rope, and he remembers you getting up early and walking around visiting cities and going to sporting goods stores. And, you know, he says, you know, he just never sat still. Were you always like that as a kid? And what kept you moving?
Well, I don't know. Just had that energy, which I don't have is now. But sure enjoyed being a roommate with your dad. That was just something else. We had a lot in common to talk about, and had just like, oh, hard to say, just we had the same kind of philosophy or the same kind of interest.
I mean, I really do want to tell you, like, you know, it was just wonderful to hear stories about you as a kid and what a good friend and teammate you were to my dad. And then you guys lose touch for, you know, essentially 50 years. And your name came up so frequently. I was just delighted just a few weeks ago to hear my dad say, "Hey, Huckle called me." What made you pick up the phone, or how did you find him?
Well, I'd been wanting to get in touch with Tony for a long time and just couldn't do it. But I have had a daughter that lives in East Texas, and she's a DA. And so she knew how to play the Internet and finally track down your dad. And I was more than happy to get that phone number and give him a call. But what are the chances of being absent from each other for 50 years and both of us still alive?
I also think, like Dad said, you know, he says there's people that you reconnect with and you don't really have anything in common. And he says the conversation with you and him, I think you guys talked for an hour the other day, picked up like you'd just seen each other a few weeks ago.
Right. And I stay in touch with another friend, another Met pitcher, Craig Anderson. Andy Anderson, who pitched in the big leagues. And he lives in Florida. And so we stay in touch with him, and he does quite a few camps and goes back to the Mets celebrity invitations in New York, and he says that's a great thing.
1964, the Mets launch a campaign. It's kind of a fun marketing campaign. Wilbur Huckle, the Metropolitan Party, nominating you for the presidential race, and buttons are made, and the Mets fans had a lot of fun with it. What do you remember of that? How did that come about?
I have no idea how that come about, but my daughters found the buttons on the Internet, and they got me one, and they got each one of them Wilbur Huckle for president.
I love that. One of the stories is that, you know, you were the first guy there for batting practice. You're the first guy into the showers after a game. My dad remembers hearing a story about a manager who was mad after a 7 or 8 or 9 game losing streak. And manager came into the clubhouse and said, you know, "Hey, don't anybody get a shower yet, because until I'm done talking." And sure enough, there's Wilbur Huckle coming out of the showers behind him with a towel around his waist. Like, you know, what do you remember of that time? Why were you so eager to get into the shower and get out of there?
Well, I guess because I got there so early and enjoyed all of that. And then I figured, well, when it's over, my job is done, I'm going home. And that was Kirby Farrell in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. I think we'd lost about 16 or 17 games in a row. And oof. Kirby come in and had the bag of batting practice balls, and he threw it in the bag, and balls rolled all across the floor, and he was mad, and that's what he said: "Nobody showers. I got some things to say." And I walked out of the showers at the wrong time.
I love that. Wilbur Huckle with us, former professional baseball player in the New York Mets organization. You're doing some coaching now. You're also managing land in Texas. How many acres are you managing? What goes into land management?
Well, there's 600 acres, and you choose 5 topics for the animals. I raised cows for a while, and then that got to be too much. And you have to put out a couple of feeders. You have to plant 10 acres. You have to provide a couple of cisterns of water for them and do predator control. So I set out a couple of hog traps, and then have a friend over in Comanche, Texas, that has dogs that are trained to hunt the feral hogs. And so that's part of the predator control.
What do they have you doing with the high school baseball team?
I finally got back in. In here in Cross Plains, baseball is not a high priority. But I'm going to church with a guy that is the head baseball coach at Brownwood, Brownwood, Texas, which is about 30 miles from here. And he he came and asked me, he said, you've played some baseball before? And I said, yes, I have. He said, would you come and help me? And I said, well, I'm tickled to death that you asked me. It's just a lot of fun working with kids, and I've coached girls softball. I guess I've been in this about 50 years now. And I had two daughters that played softball, and you know, I've coached some summer baseball, and now I finally got back into this coach had asked me to help, and there's nothing better than teaching kids how to play this game.
Wilbur Huckle is with us, former New York Met professional baseball player in the Mets organization. You played with and against a lot of great players in the minor leagues. What, you know, my dad remembers, you know, a young Bobby Bonds hitting 40 home runs and seeing Don Baylor and you know, facing Louis Tiant in a game situation. What do you remember when you tell stories and the high school kids ask you, you know, about guys you played with and against?
Well, the modern day high school kid has no idea who these players are that I'm talking about, so I have to enlighten them a little bit. But one player, my first game was against Durham, North Carolina, and Joe Morgan was playing on that team. I hit a triple the first time in my at-bat in OB, and I said, well, there's nothing to this game. And it seemed like for some reason they put me at second base, and we're late in the game, and the game is tied, and Durham's a home team, and a ground ball is hit to me with two outs. Well, this guy, the runner at first base, comes by me, and I try to tag him, but I miss him, so I start chasing him. Meanwhile, Joe Morgan is crossing the home plate with the winning run before I can tag the guy out. So I got a lesson there that I won't ever forget.
Joe Morgan, I grew up watching Joe Morgan play. Who else do you remember from that era?
Tug McGraw, mainly the players that were on the Mets.
Yeah.
Tom Seaver, of course, and then Dusty Dwyer, a catcher for the Mets, and Jerry Grody and I grew up together in San Antonio. And played against each other quite a bit, and those were some of the ones. And then the manager for the Baltimore Orioles, I can't think of his name. He was a second baseman. 1 year led the league in home runs.
I think Davey Johnson or
David Johnson.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you for that. And so. I played against him in high school and never thought that he'd go as far as he did, but he certainly proved himself.
When you were done playing, you pivoted into managing a little bit. And you see a lot of people who will do that, including Davey Johnson, who became a manager, and other guys have done that. How did you like managing, you know, at players, or did you not like it? How different was it?
It was wonderful. You had college players and you had high school players, and it was just great. And one of my catchers was Ned Yost, who played in the big leagues and then managed Kansas City to a World Series championship. And had one other one, Bob Myrick, a left-handed pitcher. At that time, everybody was wanting a left-handed pitcher, so if you could throw it all, you were going to get to the big leagues.
And the story goes that the Mets asked you, didn't they, when they looked at the players on the roster? They said, who do you think's a real prospect? And you said, only Ned Yost or only Myrick, and those were the only two guys who got there.
Well, I don't remember them asking me that, but those two guys were at the top of the list, that's for sure.
All right. When you think back to your time in baseball, you know, if you could go back and talk to a young Wilbur Huckle who was about to sign with the New York Mets, you know, what advice would you have given that young kid?
You're in it for the duration, and it just I never realized how much of a business Major League Baseball is, and so that I would say be more aware of these people that are running the show, and they're in it to make money, and just don't be satisfied in playing at the level where you are.
Played in 746 minor league games, got up to the Polo Grounds that first year, and got that proverbial cup of coffee. Wilbur Huckle, I thank you for coming on. Thank you for providing all of those stories in my childhood. My father obviously thought very fondly of you as a teammate and friend.
I'd like to mention one other thing.
Yeah.
Your mother and my wife stayed together when your dad and I went on road trips. And she certainly appreciated the company while we were gone at 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah, and I think those were, some of those road trips were long, weren't they?
Oh, and $2 a day meal money.
What are you getting for $2 a day in the 1969?
You didn't gain weight.
I love it. Wilbur Huckle, thank you.
Hey, if possible, could I get a copy of this interview?
100%. I will send you a link to it, and we'll get you the podcast.
Great. My daughters would love that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. There he goes. Wilbur Huckle. I grew up hearing stories about what a character he was and is. 83 years old now, managing 600 acres in Texas as a wildlife manager and coaching high school baseball still at 83. Now at least we know his age. There were some reports out there that he's 87. I don't think that's right, but he was a three-sport star in high school, played in high school, and then signed with the Mets in 1963 and got up to the Polo Grounds that first season as the Mets had a really bad, they were just starting out as an organization. They were just in their second year, I think, of existence at that time. They lost 109 games and then 111 games, and they were just trying to bring guys up, protect them, and put them on the major league roster, and Wilbur Huckle, one of those guys. Why don't you leave it here? We got Punch It Audio still ahead.